Environmental Natural Resources to order, Thursday, March 3rd, 2011. Welcome, members. Today, we're going to have a report, a couple different reports. We're going to start out with Bowser, the governor's recommendations. Also, you noticed on your packets, we have given you a copy of the report from the invasive species that came from the governor's not from the governor's office, I'm sorry, Senator, Commissioner Landwehr's office. I thought it important that you have that because it is an emerging issue we're dealing with, and you can take a look at that in your leisure. With that, I think we'll go right ahead. Welcome. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Julie Blackburn. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I'm here to give you a overview of our budget for the 2012 and 13 biennium. All the information it should be in your packet. We are not going to give an overhead PowerPoint presentation, but you do have all the slides in your packet, as well as a summary sheet of our general fund, our clean water fund that are included in the governor's recs, and a couple of other sheets of information about our clean water fund programs that we've been putting in place over the last couple of years, as well as our RIM project. So I'm mainly going to go from the handout of the PowerPoint slides. Hopefully you have that handy. But before I get into that, I would just want to give an overview of the two-sided sheet that has the spreadsheet on one side that has the Bowser 2012-13 proposed biennial budget, the general fund. Okay, I see some of you have located that. We have a pretty small budget. It's pretty easy, uncomplicated, so I'm just going to highlight some of the details on this. What you have here on the columns, the first was what was originally planned for 2012 and 13. The middle columns are the governor's reductions, and then the columns on the left are the ones, on the right are the final numbers that you have there. So going across the first row, the cost share projects, that's our land and water cost share projects, that received a biennial budget reduction of $1.12 million. That is a 25% reduction over the biennium. Those projects, I'll get into the details of each of these a little bit as we go through the presentation. This is just a summary. Under planning and effectiveness, this is how we work with our local units of government. We have a couple of programs listed there. The Conservation Delivery Program, this is the program that was formerly known as General Services and is now called the Conservation Delivery Program. This goes out to soil and water conservation districts. That has received in the last biennium, an 8% reduction this year. It is held harmless to any reductions because we want to make sure that there's critical capacity in place statewide to deliver our conservation programs. There are three boards that are also under planning and effectiveness, and funding for them for the biennium has been eliminated. I'll go over those in more detail later. Under rules and laws, the acronym NRBG, that's our Natural Resource Block Grant. That's the grant that we send out to all the counties that includes the funding to implement the shoreline rules, the Wetland Conservation Act rules, and local water management planning. That was also held harmless. That did receive a 12% reduction in the last biennium. You'll see a couple of other reductions there that I'll go over in more detail. And then under admin and ops, Bowser Admin received a 5% budget reduction. That did have a 9.5% reduction in the last biennium. So that's a summary of the change items.
I'm sorry, Ms. Blackburn. Could you tell me, back up and tell me where you see the 12% reduction on here? I'm not seeing that.
No, that was in the previous biennium.
Okay, so that's not recorded on here.
No.
Okay, thank you.
So that's a summary of our change items for the general fund. On the other side, you have the listing of the seven different project areas that are in the governor's budget for Bowser to receive funding on under the Clean Water Fund. And again, I'll go over these in more detail. They are basically the same types of programs we received this year. Only this in this biennium, we have 14 different line items, and we combined some of those for efficiency and ease of operations into seven. So that's all I'm going to do for the highlight of the overall budget, and then I'm just going to go right into the presentation, which you have slide by slide in your packet. The first one is our business model, the Bowser business model. We have a very large local delivery system. It's made up of soil and water conservation districts, counties, cities, watershed districts. There's probably about 450, 500 people out there that are essentially doing the work of the agency. We have 76 full-time employees in our agency, so we're the lever point for a whole lot of local communities that are locally connected getting work done. Our small agency is made up of a lot of experienced staff. We have on-the-ground experience working in local units of government and other professions that we bring to the organization. We try to blend what are the local resource needs along with what are the state priorities and concerns, and we do that through this local delivery system that very, very effectively leverages federal dollars and local dollars. On the next slide, you'll see that our agency mission is to improve and protect Minnesota's soil and water resources by working in partnership with local organizations and private landowners. On the map, you'll see, and the state map there, there's green and red. The areas that are in green are the privately held lands, and that's about 78% of the state of Minnesota, so that's where we're doing our work, in all those private lands. Also on the map, the areas that are highlighted in blue are where we have our impaired waters, and you'll see that's where most of the lands are privately held. That's why it's important for us to get our work done through those private landowners who can make the change in order to improve our water quality. I'm going to go to the next slide, which is our agency organization. We have a 20-member board. We're a unique agency in the state in that we have representation there from local units of government, and that includes townships, cities, soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts. We also have three citizens. We have five state agencies on our board, and they're the commissioners or the commissioner appointees for the Department of Health, the Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Ag, as well as the University of Minnesota Extension Service.
Ms. Blackburn, could you back up just a little bit again? I always keep backing up here. It's been a point of contention, the amount of land that's owned in the state of Minnesota by the state and other agencies. You quoted a 78% private land figure. How accurate is that? I mean, we're hearing figures. I'm hearing figures of the state owning 25%. This is significantly less than that, not, you know, a couple percent, but that's a lot of acres. I'm just wondering where you find that figure, where you can come up with that figure. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, John Jaski, Executive Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. To your point about the land ownership, this comes from a public database that's kept about land ownership. What might be more interesting for, as you can see on that diagram, that, you know, the bulk of that public land, either federal, state, or local government-owned land is, you know, in northeastern Minnesota, north central Minnesota. We can get you a county-by-county listing if you'd like to see the breakdown, if that's of value for your committee.
I think the committee would like to know that. In light of the talk of purchasing and acquiring more land through the Heritage and here and there through LCCMR, I think it would be nice to get a final figure on just exactly who owns what. If there's federal land, that should be separated from state, and I think that'd be a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, the committee will work on that and get it to you,
you.
In the next week or so.
Continue. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much. Back on the agency organization, you'll see again that we have the 20-member board. We have currently 76 full-time employees scattered throughout the state. About half of us are here in St. Paul, the rest of them through eight offices. And we are statutorily linked and provide oversight to the soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, cities, and counties again. Going to the next slide of local implementation, it's one of the things that we will talk about over and over and over again. We believe in local implementation. We know that's where the work needs to get done because it's through local implementation, these units of government that have the land use authority. And we do know that the quality of the land dictates the quality of the water, the quality of the soil, and how those are managed are dependent upon those local units of government. So we believe in the local implementation. We do have an established delivery system. The soil and water conservation districts have been in place since the Dust Bowl era. We've been doing county local water management planning for several decades. This is a very established system. They embrace a watershed approach so that we make sure that we're addressing all of the resource concerns from a comprehensive approach that looks at how the watershed is managed. And they are the effective delivery system in order to implement the legacy amendment, and that was demonstrated through the last 5 years of the Clean Water Legacy Act and the current biennium of the Clean Water Fund through the legacy. I know we have some pretty limited time, so I'm going to go through the next slide and just very briefly cover our goal. We do have 7 agency goals. The first goal is to preserve, protect, and restore soil and water resources. This is where the majority of our work comes, and that's what I'm going to be spending my time on, talking about really the next several programs. So I'm just going to flip over to the very next slide. And that's our projects and project management. Just an overview of the work that we do when we're working with our local units of government. In the last 5 years, through our pass-through grant funds that address local concerns, we have put in about 18,000 different practices throughout the landscape. All of them are documented and they're mapped, and we have that information available. All of those are meant to target 5 different concerns: keeping water on the land, maintaining healthy soils, reducing pollutants that go into our ground and surface water, ensuring biological diversity, and maintaining stream integrity. That's the gist of our main 5 points that we're trying to address when we're implementing our programs. It is important to note, however, that this is the same delivery system that is reactive whenever there is a flood or any other kind of a disaster, including tornadoes in Wadena County. And we also, through this program, have to maintain oversight over all of those different grants. Last year, we had in place about 7,000 grants. We do on-site visits. We communicate with our grantees to make sure that they're abiding by all the requirements and that they're doing the work that they said they're going to do. Going on to the next slide, the cost share program. This is one of those programs that we do have a general fund reduction. It's a change item. The cost share program goes out through soil and water conservation districts. It goes out on an allocation basis to all of the 90 soil and water conservation districts. It was established in 1977. When we give them the funds, up to 75% of that can be used for the on-the-ground practice, the rest of it for technical design, engineering, inspection. They must go to high-priority concerns, whether it's erosion or sediment control or others that are identified in statute and rule. Typically, they're going to native buffers, feedlots. We have a cooperative weed management program. They also are very effective at leveraging the USDA Federal Farm Bill programs and do that very effectively. The Federal Farm Bill in the state brings in about $140 million a year. And so we can kind of match the state dollar to the federal dollar for really effective leveraging. This cost share program, because it's in place and has been in place since 1977, is the mechanism also how we deliver our flood disaster recovery assistance. We just put an amendment onto the existing contract, and they are able to go ahead and get those cost share flood recovery funds out right away. So this has a reduction, again, of 25%, $1.12 million. Going on to the next slide, our surface and drinking water protection restoration grants. I know I've been here before and I've shared this document with you. It's in your packet. It's the 2010-11 Clean Water Fund Summary. When I'm talking about this change item in this slide for the $25 million, we're talking about the same projects and practices that are covered in this handout. We gave about $20 million out in this biennium. On the inside, you see some samples of the different types of projects that we've put in place. So rather than go into a lot of discussion about what this is, you can go online also on your own. You can look at these practices and projects. If you go onto our website, you'll see the legacy logo. When you click on that, you go to a statewide map, and you can look at all these projects scattered throughout the state and learn about the outcomes and what they're doing. So, again, that matches up with those five main areas that we're targeting. And this goes out through a competitive process that's based on readiness, measures, outcomes, and the resource that they're targeting. So that's a clean water change item for $25 million. The next slide is for the conservation drainage and assistance project. This project we have in place right now, through this biennium, we only had $313,000 available. We had requests in excess of several million dollars. We know that people want to do this. Conservation, the drainage, the amount of drainage that we have in this state, we have about 21,000 miles of drainage ditches in this state. And what we're trying to do with this is make sure that we get some conservation measures put on the drainage systems. And for whatever unit of government is working on this, they also have to include evaluation and outreach with any of the practices they're putting in. We're trying to share the information and knowledge about how effective these are so that we get better adoption. There's some examples on your sheet of side inlet controls where we try to control erosion right along the sides of the drainage systems. There's a two-stage ditch design that's on your slide that's meant to retain water as well as stop erosion. And then there's a controlled release on tiling system that's demonstrated there, and that's to try to hold that water on the land a little bit longer after a rain event and not have all the flooding going into the drainage system and any effects that there might be downstream. So that's a change item for $2 million for conservation drainage. On the next slide is our citizen and community participation grants. This is a change item for $2.5 million from the Clean Water Fund. And what this project is doing is it's looking at getting citizens involved in conservation, in clean water activities, while still doing all of the high-priority practices and projects that are in a local water management plan or an impaired waters implementation plan. So they're still high-priority projects. They're meant to get citizens engaged so that we have long-term sustainability while still ensuring that it is a high-priority project in practice. We're looking at delivering this through a network of small grants. So we give out a big grant to a regional entity, and they do some micro grants. And these might be small grants that are small projects that pop up through some kind of maybe some developments going in, and some citizens might realize that there's some efforts that they could do there. It's not the type of project or practice that you would be able to apply for in a year in advance. We have a minimum requirement of $30,000 on our grants. These might be a couple thousand here and there in order to get citizens active in conservation. Going on to the next slide, all the other projects that I was talking about are BMPs. They're things that you can put on the ground. The next slide is our long-term conservation projects, and that's our Reinvest in Minnesota program. That's our conservation easement program, which has been in place for 25 years. This is the 25th anniversary, and on that little 3x5 card, which I've given out before, and I have more here to give out, we have the legacy logo, the 25 years of legacy on the one side, and on the other side is our RIM, 25 years of RIM. When you go to our website right now, you can go to the link that's on the front page, and you can see every single conservation easement we've put in place, including each practice. So it's a pretty effective program. We've been able to get about 230,000 acres enrolled in conservation easements, restoring wetlands primarily. But also now through the Clean Water Fund, we've been doing riparian buffers as well as protecting sensitive groundwater areas. The majority of these easements have been located so far in the western part of the state and the southern part of the state, where most of the wetlands have been drained, since that's been the targeting of that. We do also take care of some flood easements. Right now we have $10 million in the flood flood bonding bill that was put towards flood reduction areas. So that's another way that we can use that RIM easement program. Going over to the next slide is an example of an easement. This was in Waconia, right next to Lake Waconia. It's a sod farm that was taken out of production and is now going into a restored wetland. This has a direct discharge into Lake Waconia. It was also the site of one of the national 2 millionth acre sign-up. The Natural Resource Conservation Service came to the state and went to this site. It was their celebration of 2 million acres of their Reinvest in Minnesota WRP partnership. There's also some information on this slide about three sub-watersheds that we've been looking at as far as the amount of land that's put in conservation easement and the proximity to the stream. And in the West Fork Beaver Creek watershed is where we've put the most conservation easements in, and they've been closest to that stream, and we've found that the biological index in that stream has gone up considerably due to those easements. So we have some good results coming from that easement program. The next slide is the riparian buffers and wellhead protection change item, and that's a change item for $13 million that goes towards buffers and the wellhead easement program. This isn't for wetlands, so this is specifically for clean water. $12 million of that is for buffers, and of that $12 million, $5 million is to marry up with outdoor heritage funds in order for us to have multiple purpose, bigger buffer strips that get a lot of stuff done on the ground because they're big buffer strips. They're not just for the immediate riparian area. So the Outdoor Heritage Council recommended that, and it is in the bill right now, $2.5 million, and we're hoping for another $2.5 million next year to match up with $5 million of the Clean Water Fund. It will be the first time that those funds are used together in order to get multiple benefits on the ground. There's $1 million in there also for protecting vulnerable wellhead areas. On your slide, you'll see a map of Barnesville's delineated wellhead area. The area that's in red is highly vulnerable to pollution and groundwater sensitivity, and those are the areas that we're targeting. Over 200 wellhead areas throughout the state we're targeting for this this easement program in order to protect groundwater. Moving on to the next slide. We're going away then from all the projects and practices we put on the ground, and now we're going to talk a little bit about rules and laws. Not going to cover anything on this slide because, again, we're short of time, so I'm going to go on to the next one, which is the Wetland Conservation Act. Bowser is the agency that's in charge of implementing the Wetland Conservation Act. That is the act that protects over 10 million acres of wetlands in the state. We have a pretty small staff that does the oversight of this, but local units of government are in charge of implementing it. It's local boards, county boards, city councils that actually implement this locally with their approval and review process. We do have a change item here for a reduction of $400,000. In 2007, this $400,000 started coming to our budget because that was the height of the development era. And around the metro area, there was a lot of wetland concerns that were happening because of development. So we had $200,000 per biennium that was a DNR pass-through for them to do flyovers and additional enforcement. We had $200,000 per biennium that was a pass-through to the 11-county metro area for additional enforcement. At this time, with the budget concerns and the lack of development, this has been eliminated from the budget. Overall, for this program area, for WACA, it is a 5% program reduction. Going on to the next slide, I'm not going to talk about this a whole lot. This is because there is no general funds in this. This is our local road replacement program. When there's a local road that's being put in or changed or realigned for safety reasons or some other kind of hazard, Bowser's responsible for replacing any of the wetland impacts due to that change in alignment or upgrade from that road for safety reasons. That's just a little bit of information about that. Since there's no general fund, I'm going to move on. I can certainly take any questions either now or offline also about that program. The next slide is the Natural Resource Block Grant. This is a Every year, we give out funds to the counties in order for them to implement state rules and regulations. This includes the Wetland Conservation Act, the Shoreland Act, and local water management rules. Through our biennium, it's $7 million, $7,052,000. They're distributed through counties, and some portion of that goes to soil and water conservation districts also for implementing the WACA rules. And this was one of those that received a 12% reduction in the last biennium, and at this point is not a change item. So I'm going to move on to the next item, which is our drainage oversight. This is also not a change item. Bowser provides oversight for drainage authorities. Again, there's about 21,000 miles of public drainage ditches in the state. Both counties and watershed districts are the oversight authorities over drainage. We work with a drainage work group that's in statute. We facilitate the drainage work group, which has got a lot of different interests on it, from environmental groups to drainage authorities, farmers, and units of government. And they work out through a consensus process any kind of changes that might come to you for changes in statute. So it's a very effective unit of government or work group. And they try to address those very, very delicate issues that are contained in drainage law. I'm going to go on to the next slide, which is our goal number two. In order to get all those programs and projects and practices done, we need to have an effective and efficient local delivery system. That's the main focus of our agency. Those are the two primary focuses of our agency. I'm just going to go into the next slide and tell you about how we meet those goals. The next slide is the Conservation Delivery Program. And this was, for those of you who are familiar with our budget, this used to be called the General Services Program. Now it's called the Conservation Delivery Program in order to really fully talk about what this means. This is a grant that goes out to soil and water conservation districts in order to keep that critical capacity in place throughout the entire state. These are the folks that are there at the ready when there is an emergency, and they're there whenever any kind of landowner comes in that has a question about what they can do with their property in order to put conservation in place, or if they have any concerns about soil or erosion or conservation. There are 90 districts spread throughout the state. They are managed by a board of five that are elected, and they are the primary delivery system for the feedlot program, our RIM program, our Reinvested Minnesota program, and a number of other things. In our budget this year, or for this biennium, the amount is the same as it was this year, which is $3.185 million per year. Going on to the next slide, this is our local resource protection and innovation grants. This is a change item for the Clean Water Fund for $4.5 million. What we want to do with this grant is make sure that those local units of government out there have the best possible technology and targeting and resources in their plans. We're spending a lot of money on practices. We want to make sure that the plans that they have in place really target these with laser precision. Where should that conservation dollar go? So what we're looking at here is really upgrading the planning and the effectiveness of local units of government to address the conservation concerns. We want to do this through challenge grants that are going to go out for them to increase their local protection. It might be also increasing any kind of local ordinance to better protect the local resource. On the next page, what you'll see is an example of what this might entail, and that's the project prioritization using an environmental benefits index. This is a project that Bowser is working on with the University of Minnesota to look at the potential of soil erosion. We did some research on that, included then some stream power index, and overlaid that with habitat quality. And what we come up with is this overall environmental benefits index. This is just finishing up now. This was funded by the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund. We want to take this information out to local communities and make sure that they're looking at this when they're targeting that conservation dollar. So these are what these grants would go to try to get all this new research, new data like LIDAR, and put it into the local plans. I'm going to go on to the next change item, the regional water organizations. We have three regional water organizations that we funded through Bowser. They've been pass-through funds. They're to the Red River Basin Commission, the Minnesota River Board, and the Area 2 Flood Control Board. And those in this biennium, those have been eliminated for funding. And this was in order to keep that critical statewide capacity in place that has been reduced in the past. I'm just going to go on to the next slide and very quickly highlight our training program. This was new. We created it new last year in order to really make sure that all of our local units of government have the most recent data, the most recent knowledge in order to, again, take this $25 million, the millions that we're putting in from the Clean Water Fund, and make sure that it's on the ground being done the best way. So just a little bit of information there about our training program. I'm going to go on to goal three, the next slide, and that's for us to evaluate and communicate the effectiveness of our conservation programs. We need to make sure that all of this money that we're spending on conservation is put on the ground right, and that we evaluate the outcomes and we communicate that to the citizens. So this is a change item for $1.8 million. It allows us to do some on-the-ground evaluation of what we're doing. We do a lot of monitoring of water, and we don't do a lot of monitoring of what's happening on the land. One of the things we want to do with this change item is make sure that we have a statewide tillage transect survey in the agricultural areas. What are the adoption rates? What's happening with soil? What happens on the land is the leading indicator for what happens in the water, and we haven't been measuring that, and we need to start taking a look at that. This allows us to do that. You have in here something called E-Link. For those of you that aren't familiar with it, that's how we manage all of our grant programs, and it's where all of the reporting for every practice comes into place. We also want to make this E-Link process, this E-Link reporting system, available for public query. We need to do some work on that in order to make that possible. So that's the change item for $1.8 million from the Clean Water Fund. The next slide, moving on to the next slide, is our Performance Review and Assistance Program. This is mandated by statute. There's an example here. We do an annual review of every single local unit of government. It's available online to see how they're doing, performing against their own standards that they've set up for themselves. That report, I think, was submitted to you. We have an annual report that was submitted to you in January. Not going to go over this right now. Again, I can talk to you about that offline or anytime you would like me to. The next slide is E-Link for web, and on this slide you'll see an example of what happens when all of these practices are reported through this online reporting system. We can start to map out, and this is an example of Wilkin County. All of the practices that have been put in place, the amount of erosion that's been addressed, those are the kinds of things that we can provide to you. We hope to provide online. Anybody could look anywhere at what's been going on in their area. We want to make sure that that gets more publicly available through that change item. Going on to the next slide, again, that's determining the on-the-ground outcomes. We want to make sure that what we're putting on the ground is making a difference. So there's just a little bit of information there about what that means as far as determining our estimators, making sure that they're valid estimators of pollution reduction, and making sure that we're using the best science. I'm going to go on to goal four now, which is ensuring the state's long-term integrity of the state's investment. This is our program where we go out and we make sure that any of those easements that have been put in place, any of our wetland banks that have been put in place, still have their conservation value. We pay a lot of money for those easements, and we want to make sure that it's still there in the future. On the slide that says RIM wetland bank inspections, you'll see some examples of the inspection process that we have in place. RIM easements are inspected every year for the first 5 years, and then every third year after that. The SWCDs inspect those. We have over 5,600 easements. Wetland banks are monitored and inspected every single year until all the credits are approved, and then after that, the goal is every 5 years. We have about 300 different bank sites scattered throughout the state. On this slide, you'll also see that we had a RIM quality assurance program in 2010. This last year, we decided that we needed to audit ourselves, essentially, on how we're doing on our own RIM program. So we did a little test pilot project evaluating how we evaluate our RIM process. And we implemented some new things from that. So we're always trying to look at, are we making sure that the state's investment is worthwhile? Just a couple more things here. The next slide is on our restoration evaluations. That's a change item of $186,000 out of the Clean Water Fund. This was a requirement of last year's language that was approved, Chapter 361, that we are now required to do restoration evaluations, habitat restoration evaluations, and it's a program that we're implementing with the Department of Natural Resources. And we are allowed in that to have 1%, 1/10 of 1% of the Clean Water Fund in order to do those activities. Our goal 5 is an efficient and effective operations focused on strong partnerships. That's the next change item. That's our admin reduction of 5% or $380,000. Again, in this current biennium, we had a 10% reduction. We've already done a number of different layoffs. We have a travel reduction that we've implemented. We'll be looking to do those same kinds of activities with this reduction. And there isn't much more specific than that. We don't have, obviously, a big budget. That's about all we can do. We have staff. We have travel. So that's an overall view of all of our goals and our change items. The next slide is just a summary of the change item reductions that are in place for the general fund, a total of $2.476 million, 9% overall reduction. And then the next slide is a summary of all the funds. Some of them are anticipated funds. We do have some special revenues, and then we have Outdoor Heritage Fund recommendations, the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund recommendations, and the Clean Water Fund. So that's just an overview of all of the different types of funds. And I know that was very quick. You probably have questions, and I'd be willing to take any at this time.
Questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Blackburn, the feedlot program, I see that's being reduced in Governor Dayton's budget by $455,000 down to zero. And then that's going to be moved over to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Is that correct?
Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Senator Doms, what happens with our with the feedlot cost share program is under cost share the last 6 years or so, we've had multiple items that have been included in the cost share program. So we had a general allocation, and it was of this amount, X amount is for feedlots, and X amount is for native buffers. The amount is getting so small that it's becoming very difficult to manage. So rather than have multiple lines under one general program, we wanted to roll all those together so that when it goes out to counties, they can use it for their local needs. It just, when you have it that split up and the number gets too small, it becomes to the point where you can't do anything with those dollars. So we rolled it all together. It'll go out to soil and conservation districts in a bigger general allocation so that they can be more flexible to implement it with their local needs.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Is that an equal, the rollout then, the increase of soil and water conservations, is that going to be equal to $455,000 then for the feedlots or not?
Mr. Chair and Senator, it's not going to be an increased amount of cost share.
I said equal. I'm sorry.
Let me just ask you. Can you say your question over again?
You had stated that it was going to be rolled together and then sent out to soil and water conservation districts. My question is if we're looking at $455,000 that was previously designated for feedlots, now moved to zero. Your comment was it was going to be all rolled together.
Mm-hmm.
When it's rolled together, will that $455,000, will that be the same number, or will it be a lesser number that's being rolled into the Soil and Water Conservation's general account?
Mr. Chair and Senator, what's going to happen is instead of having individual grants with individual appropriations for different types of activities, it will be rolled in. It will be up to the Soil and Water Conservation District to implement that based on what they have as their local priorities and local needs. Many of them have been using those funds for feedlots, and so we would actually assume that there's an opportunity for it to be increased based on local needs rather than it going to some other specific concern like possibly native buffers or weeds. It could be going towards this instead. So it's we actually think it provides for more flexibility to do those kinds of activities, but we don't have a guarantee.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I realize that you're giving them the flexibility. I'm just questioning, will the funds still be there? Instead of being under the feedlot, will it be that same amount of funds be given to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in their general account to be used as they choose? I understand there will be more flexibility to the local Soil and Water Conservation Districts. I'm just questioning if the dollars will be there, and if so, where those dollars are coming from when they're taken out of the budget.
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dom, the funds are going to be delivered to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts exactly the same way. They aren't just going to be sectioned out to those very specific concerns. So the program is the same. It's just that we took away the specificity of the types of things they could do with that. But the grant is the same, and the delivery to the Soil and Water Districts are the same. So it essentially is just a roll-up of those dollars into one program. It always was the cost-share program. They just had restrictions on how they could use that money previously, and now it's more flexible. And I'm not sure if that answers the question yet.
Okay, that's thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee?
I have one, and I'm not sure who to answer this, but noticing the Clean Water Fund is 48.9 million this year, or this biennium. This is going to be your second of the last, or is it your last page? And Outdoor Heritage of 17 million. What has been the growth of those accounts over the past 3 years since an inception? Do you know? Is it going up more and more every year? Maybe Mr. Jasky could answer that.
Mr. Chairman, John Jasky, Director Bowser. If your question is those accounts in general, what's the total amount in terms of increases over the last biennium for the Outdoor Heritage and Clean Water Funds?
Increases, yes.
Mr. Knopf might have better information than I do, but recall that the biennium passed. The funds didn't begin to be filled until partway through the year because the sales tax didn't kick in until partway. So my recollection is that and the Outdoor Heritage and Clean Water are equal portions of the legacy amendment, 33%. I'm going to take a round number in my head and say it was around $150 million in each of those in the biennium, and that this biennium we expect it to be about $180 million.
No, so, my question is for your fund here.
Oh.
The amount of money that you've been receiving over the past three years from those particular funds. And the reason I'm asking that is I'm seeing a 25% reduction here on your first presentation. And also noticing only a 5% reduction for administration, but a 25% reduction up on programs, L&W programs, cost share. The reason I'm asking that is, are we looking at possibly some supplanting here and going on? I mean, have you been asked that, John? I guess I should have asked you that before the meeting, but it's very obvious this is getting to be quite large here.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, you know, one thing what you see in the spreadsheets, you see the things that, you know, have a reduction. You can see that the largest ones have no reduction. The grants to soil and water districts and the grants to counties have a zero reduction. So when you have no reduction there, you have greater reductions in other program areas. The funds that go to those two organizations are for, you know, projects and programs as well. And I don't have a great answer for you. One of the things that we do in our legacy amendment grants is we require those local authorities to state that the funding they're getting from the legacy amendment is not being used to do what you just described, which is to supplement traditional sources. So we have that requirement in the grant agreements we use to send that money out.
Maybe a little more clear question would be, I know the governor last year, and I'm not sure what the governor had in his bonding proposal this year, but I know Governor Pawlenty had reduced it an awful lot. Is that an accurate statement?
And if that is, from what to what, and what did the governor do this year for bonding, if you recall?
Mr. Chairman, specific to bonding, and the, I guess the one item you're probably referring to is a Reinvest in Minnesota program, the governor vetoed that line item, vetoed that item in the last session. There was an appropriation, though, to that program in the special session this past year during the, to respond to the flood. Obviously, they're aimed at different things. You know, the Outdoor Heritage Fund is aimed at, you know, wildlife habitat as its first, you know, important function. The flood response money is aimed at flood prevention and mitigation. So they're, you know, same program, different targets. But the funding has traditionally come from a variety of sources. We also leverage a great deal of federal WRP funding through that program as well. So and that's, I'm not giving you a good answer, I don't think, because I don't think I have one, and maybe others can be asked the same maybe, question and give you a better one, but I don't have a better answer for you today.
Maybe you could just stop by my office or something. We can look at those figures, and I can bring it back to the committee, and that would be just fine.
Be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, if the, just to quickly add here how much money the Bowser received over the last, in the current biennium from the dedicated funds, it's about $16 million from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and about $36.7 from the Clean Water.
I'm sorry, what was that second
figure? $36.7
from the Clean Water?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we can get you, you know, kind of a more retro-looking history of the budget numbers for general fund and bonding and the dedicated fund, if that's what you're trying to understand, is some of the history and how they've changed.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
Okay, we can do that,
Thank
Mr.
You.
Chairman.
Senator Kielash.
Just a quick question. There seems like a lot of overlap between the different goals and that, and I'm just wondering if you could give us some commentary about how it's managed with between agencies, within the different programs that you're monitoring and managing. Are we very efficient on it, at it, or, you know, can you expand on that a little bit for me?
Mr. Chair and Senator, as far as the overlap, I'm assuming you mean between overall agencies?
Not just agencies, but even between the programs you described here.
Okay. Well, our programs, as far as any kind of overlap, the majority of our work is about getting practices and projects on the ground. We offer that through a number of different types of programs because we have to have a menu. These are all based on private landowners volunteering to do things. Mm-hmm. So we try to make sure that there's an opportunity for anybody to get involved in those programs. So we do have the more permanent protection. We have conservation practices. And we have different kinds of local units of government that focus on very specific areas of implementation. So as far as our practices and programs, that's the majority of what we do. And then that's the first goal. The second goal is really about supporting them, what we do to support them carrying out the work of implementing conservation. And that's really the majority of our work. The rest of it is all kind of supporting that infrastructure that's in place.
Can I just follow up? I think part of what I mean is that you have the conservation and drainage, and then you have wetlands creation kinds of things. Do they work together on that so that you can do the drainage into the wetlands or whatever? Try to get some efficiencies out of all of it because of the size and scope of the project that covers multiple programs that you've got going.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, and just another example, Ms. Blackburn mentioned, you know, how these projects and practices are different. One clear example, you can look at a conservation easement program, and you drove by and you saw conservation practices there, and it would look not any different than a conservation project done under a contract, okay? But they're very different programs because the landowners made a choice about which one they're interested in doing. So you have to have separate programs, separate criteria, separate funding for those. To your other question about drainage and wetlands, in fact, you've got, you know, state laws that have sometimes different purposed outcomes. But, yes, those do work together. And as Ms. Blackburn indicated, we've got a conservation drainage program which is trying to do that very thing, is to show how we can hold water on the land, provide water quality, while also providing that drainage benefit that people have a right to based on past practice and past payments they've made to this infrastructure that's been built for that purpose. So there are reasons why these things have discrete categories.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Blackburn, under the Region Water Organizations, I'm not real familiar with Red River Basin Minnesota River Board, but I am the Area 2 Flood Control for Southwest Minnesota. And can you tell me, have they done such a good job that the governor feels they don't need to be an organization anymore, or will they be funded someplace else, or what expectations can we have as far as flood control in Southwest Minnesota and funding for that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dames, I'll try and answer that one. The Area 2 Joint Powers Organization is a group, as you know, of counties that have joined together to manage flooding, and they've done that successfully for, you know, at least 20 years, if not longer. The challenge we have and the problem we face is that we've got a choice between trying to fund a regional entity that the counties have created for themselves or take funding away from the counties through other programs that are trying to be held at their current funding levels. So you can see the Natural Resources Block Grant, you know, the largest item in the budget has a zero reduction, which is money that goes directly to counties to manage water. The Area 2 organization is a joint powers of counties, which, you know, they could choose to find funding through this source or other sources to put together. They also have the ability to pursue bonding funds at the state level for those structures, and they've done that to some extent. So, Mr. Chairman and Senator, it's a hard decision to make, but the choice was to give the counties the base funding and then have them pursue other funding for that joint powers authority.
I guess I'm just, Mr. Follow Chair, up. Follow up. I guess I'm just surprised with all the spring floodings and stuff we're expecting and all the good work that flood control has done, that now we take the funding away and we'll see what the results are in a couple of years by doing that. When that water starts moving, that's the way it is. Thank you.
No more further questions. Thank you very much for the presentation. And you can get back to me with that if you can as soon as you can, Mr. Jaskey.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move in now to the MPCA presentation, the governor's budget recommendation. I have on the agenda Commissioner Paul Austin. I don't know if he's here. I seen him here earlier. If not, Ms. Halbach, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The commissioner was called away to the governor's office, and so when he returns, I think I'll be at a spot where he can talk with you.
Thank you. And members, we have all this information, budget information in the packet. You can just give us a little guide as we go along as to which one you're working off. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the committee, I'm Myrna Halbach, and I'm the chief financial officer for the Pollution Control Agency. And really, I'm going to work off of your slide presentation. So while I have information for you both in a fact sheet that summarizes the initiatives, and we have a fairly detailed spreadsheet that tries to lay out the outcomes we have in the strategic plan, what we thought would be of most benefit to the committee is really talk a little bit about, quickly in the presentation, some of the outcomes we have achieved in 10 and 11, just with some highlights, and then move into the 12 and 13 budget. So that's what I'll do.
Perfect. Thank you.
So in your presentations, it would start with slide 6. So it would be on page 3 because there's two slides to every page. And I just want to start a little bit with an overview of the agency and what we're made of. And we are unique in that we do have a citizens board, so similar to what you just heard from the Board and Water Soil Resources, we each have some governing bodies structured a little bit different. Our MPCA commissioner is actually the secretary to the board and leads it, and then we have an 8-member board that is appointed. We also do work and act as the Environmental Protection Agency's representative here in the state, and we are authorized, for instance, to implement the Superfund program on behalf of the federal government. We do the air Title V permitting, which is really the construction and operation of facilities that are required to have a permit. And we have the entire water program from the federal government. That goes from monitoring all the way to permitting programs. So that's quite broad. And in our budget and in our staffing, that's about half of our work. So water, as you might imagine, in the state of Minnesota is a very important part of our job to do. As you heard earlier, we do partner with the various agencies in state government and at the local government. One of the things that we do is we're working with counties to implement both the feedlot program, so on the regulatory and inspection and that side, for the feedlot program, for the subsurface treatment systems. In the metro area, our hazardous waste inspections and tank inspections are done with county partners with us. And we'll talk about how that money gets out to them to help them do that. We had a pilot with stormwater inspections. We still have an interest for counties to do that. But at the present time, we really don't have the funding resources in that area. And then we generally have some stakeholder when we're doing rules, or in the case of the stormwater program, because it's so complex, we actually have a standing committee to help advise us, and that has both the people really implementing construction and on the field, so we know what problems that they have. We have the consultants who help solve it in the field, and then we have our own staff trying to figure out how to do the program in the most efficient way. If you move to the next slide, then, just again, we have a little over 900 employees, and later we'll be able to present you kind of a history of the last few years on what that employment has looked like for the agency and where we are. We're currently structured in 8 different divisions, and it's really that structure is based on the delivery to the various sectors. So if you're in the industrial division and you're thinking and you wanted to find who do I get help with, you know the industrial division is there. Municipalities, while we call it municipal, it's really county and city. And so, again, if you need that, you know where to look. Our regional division is the division that kind of hits the broad spectrum from feedlots, environmental review, TMDL work, and so that really isn't organized to a municipality or to a sector, and so therefore we have the regional division. Remediation, as the name applies, is cleanup. And then we have prevention and assistance, which really has a variety of tools to help both businesses and communities and counties do the prevention side so that we can avoid either permitting or compliance and enforcement issues. So it's much cheaper to do the prevention up front than do Superfund cleanup at the back end. And so how do we manage those wastes in that? Our Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division is really our scientists and research areas. So that's where most of our modelers are, from understanding the current background conditions, whether it be air or water. Data and performance is, again, exactly as it sounds. And our operational support, which I lead, is about those sorts of services that service the agency and its staff. So renting buildings, running the fleet, keeping our HR issues, and then the communication staff are in there as well.
Ms. Hallbeck, if I may, you met with me probably a couple of weeks ago already. And we talked about employees and the number of employees you have, rural versus with your rural divisions. Can you give the members an idea as to how many members or how many employees you have in the rural communities versus the Metro St. Paul office?
Mr. Chair, of the roughly 900 staff we have, about 200 of them are in the rural. Our 8 offices out across the state, and about 700 of them are located here in St. Paul.
Thank you.
The next slide is just a brief reminder of what our mission is, and I quickly want to move on to kind of the agency strategic plan, which guides our work. And again, our strategic plan, and I'll talk how this fits in with our other activities, but really sets those long-range goals. Where do we want to be in 2020? Where do we want to be in 2018? What are we trying to set up for monitoring across the agency? And it's focused all the way down to the individual work plans at the agency and what staff are doing to help each of those go. And once a year, we take time out and look at what are the outcomes we achieve, and we do that in the fall of each year. And once a year, we look at how efficiently and effectively we're operating, and we do that in the spring of the year. And each of those tends to be 150 to 200 slides that we're looking at internally, and there's no way we could do that with you, so I'm just going to highlight a few areas as we move along in here. Again, later as we talk about 12 and 13, I thought it best to start with where were we in 10 and 11. We're kind of unique as we are funded. First of all, we have funds, and our programs are slightly based on media and not on kind of the activity we're doing. So I'll explain that a little bit. But generally, this slide shows where we are funded from. And in 2010 and 11, the general fund was about 5% of our budget. The largest share of our budget is the environmental fund. And I will explain as we go on what revenues come into that fund. But again, at this point, I just wanted to give you that kind of briefing. And then with the next slide, you can actually see what we call programs and how we're appropriated the money, which is based on our media and where we're acting. So again, as you can see, water is our largest portion of the budget and the activities. You'll see the acronym EACM. It's a shorthand way to say environmental assistance and cross media, which on a slide doesn't work very well. And just so you understand where that is, a good share of that is the work that was previously done by the Office of Environmental Assistance. And about 5 years ago, they were merged back with us. We don't want to lose that important prevention work and the tools that they do. And then cross-media is really those sorts of things that work across the environment and not in one media specific. And the best example we have for that is environmental review, where when you're looking at those worksheets and the projects, you're looking at land, water, and air all at once. This is also the fund that brings in where most of our federal dollars come in a performance partnership grant. So we have to meet certain objectives with the federal government. And that comes in as a block grant to meet those objectives. And then it will be divided from there into our air, water, and land activities. We also, though, from the federal government, get very specific kinds of grants. Just very quickly, I've moved on now to slide 12, where it says air program expenditures by fund, and I'm going to walk through each of those medias and just a couple of examples from what we've achieved in the programs, not in detail, but just a couple so you know where we're going and what is funded. So of our entire program funding, $28.6 million in 10 and 11 was for the air program, and you can see that the majority of that is from the environmental fund, a small amount from the federal government, and then the miscellaneous special revenue is really contracts and areas that we have to do. For instance, we have special contract with a couple of the refineries to do monitoring at theirs. Again, moving on to the next slide, the real way to understand what our air program is to read our yearly air quality legislative report, and that I will just provide you a couple of slides in that. There are six parameters that we look at, and you can see those six on the slide. Those are the six that we and the federal government look as criteria pollutants and where they guide us on how we manage. The federal government right now is looking at those pollutants, and some of them will have probably lower standards in the next year to 2 years. Depending on where those standards go, the metropolitan area, which could impact 18 counties, including two in Wisconsin, could be considered in non-attainment. In other words, we would not be meeting the air standards. If that happens, that will require significant work both on our part for monitoring and on the business to show that they're not adding any more pollutants to the area. And so we really try to do a proactive approach to avoid that. The next slides show some of that potential range of where the slides are. So if you look at the 8-hour ozone on the next slide, you'll see that we have the potential for new 8-hour ozone standards, and there's a range in those standards, all of them being much lower than the red line across the top, which is the current standard. Depending on where that proposed standard is selected, Minnesota will be considered in non-attainment. If we are in non-attainment, that would probably happen in 2011, and beginning in 2012, we'll have to adjust our permitting and modeling programs to adjust to that and to be ultimately able to show that we've done enough work to come back into attainment before new industries could actually locate within that arena. That's why it's really important for us to do the prevention side of this activity. The next one, again, PM 2.5, which again is quite a health standard. So small that you don't typically see it when you're breathing it, but it impacts the lungs. And when we have air alerts for this, we have recorded from the hospitals the increase in asthma attacks and other lung-related things. We've been very proactive with a group called Clean Air Minnesota, which is a conglomerate of private and nonprofit groups, to be proactive. One of the first areas was the diesel retrofits to refit the catalytic converters on school buses and reduce the exposure to children riding those buses, particularly in the non-metro area where they tend to ride the buses longer than they do in the metro area. And so we started with the non-metro, but we've really replaced all of the school buses that needed it. The last one in the air quality area is, again, just an annual. There's a difference between the daily and the annual, and the same non-attainment issues pertain to this one depending on where they pick those. So I'll move along to the land programs. And again, our land programs include solid waste, hazardous waste, the closed landfill program, the Superfund cleanup program, and the tanks program. See, again, we're two funds, the remediation fund, and we'll talk about this as we go on. The remediation fund really receives a good share of its funding from the environmental fund. So there's a movement between the environmental fund and the remediation fund. And if we move on to the next slide then, one of the areas this year we worked, and again, this is where you might see multimedia come into play. On open burning, which is really out in the rural areas, one of the hazards, because there's no control on that burn barrel when it happens, and so dioxins, furans, lead, mercury are really into this area of the burn barrel and exposing people there. And so we have a program to try to work with the counties as they look at their areas and where the burn barrels are and how to do it. And mostly we're providing the technical support for the counties to implement at their local area. And we've developed marketing and some tools for them to use.
Ms. Elbach, if I could just back up again for that burn barrel. I see the greens are the counties that have got burning bans then, is that correct? Or resolutions? And no burning barrels, is that right?
Mr. Chair, there may still be a burning barrel, but what the state law requires to truly make burning barrels illegal is for the county to decide that indeed every resident in the county has access to solid waste services and collection. And so once they pass that resolution, then that county has the authority to look at burn barrels and remove, you know, ask the citizen to remove the burn barrel and use collection. But it really takes a proactive point on the county. The next slide is just our tracking system for estimates on the household burning. And the blue line across the top is what we have and the number of burning barrels that exist. The orange line going down is what we would like to achieve through the program. And we are trying to adapt the program to service the households. And so we actually do a survey of the households that have burn barrels and ask them what might influence them to move away from burning in a barrel, and then design and try to help them achieve that. So this is not where we go out and issue a citation and issue a penalty to them in that manner. This is really helping the household voluntarily change their habits. The next slide, Mr. Chair, is about our closed landfill construction project. We are very much nearing the end of this program, which has been funded in a three-way component. First of all, from the remediation fund. And part of that remediation fund is environmental fund, but also insurance recovery activities, where we have sought to go after the insurance companies that really ensured the landfills that they would not damage groundwater and others. And we have recovered from the insurance nearly $100 million in about 15 years. And I'm getting that detailed information for the House, and so we'll share that with this committee as well. But we have about six major landfills to finish construction on that are in the program. Our goal is to complete this by 2015. We'll probably need one more round of bonding to help manage that, because bonding is part of the three-legged stool. Once that is complete, that will allow us to look at really not moving environmental fund as much to remediation and cleanup, but allow us to work with that and perhaps increase the amount of funds that we share with counties to manage household hazardous waste and their recycling programs. And we'll get into that, but they receive a portion of the environmental fund through our SCORE program. So we really want to be able to continue to work with the counties as they look at that activity. And the next slide shows one of the things that the counties do for the state, which is run the household hazardous waste programs. What the state does for the counties is we accept the liability for these counties to operate household hazardous waste collections on behalf of the state. Because as we looked at the impacts at normal solid waste landfills, one of the biggest impact was the hazardous waste coming from our local homes, and so what we throw away in our garbage. If we can collect them and properly manage that, then that reduces the risk both for the solid waste landfills but also the solid waste incinerators. And so we're really trying to manage this with the counties. I used to manage one of these myself, and it is really a wonderful community activity. We have volunteers who come and help do that. We have people who save their hazardous waste until we're back into that community. We had a mobile facility. The Metro County share, so that when you're in one county, you can still go to the nearest household hazardous waste in another one. So it's a very valuable program, and what we want to do is increase for a period of time the number of people coming, because that stagnated for a while. And then eventually you should see the amount that they're bringing decrease, and eventually we hope that we have the sorts of materials that the household doesn't have household hazardous waste. and so that we really can move these facilities out of the network. Our goal is always to be moving people so that they have the right choices and they don't have to manage in a specific way, which ultimately saves us all money.
Question on that, when you said the state covers the liability portion of this for the counties, what does that cost? You have an idea?
Mr. Chair, I'll have to go back and look at it, but we have a small insurance and part that the PCA pays through its program, so it's not covered under the big umbrella of the state. We actually accept that. We approve who they use as a contractor, so we have some control over to make sure it goes to the right contractor and is managed in the right way. We really have never had to implement that because the counties have very skilled staff, are invested very much, and we know what facilities they go to. So we don't think it's a high risk for the state, but it is part of the shared responsibility that we do. And rather than our agency staffing up and operating these across the region, we really use the locals and to manage it much closer to home. A good share, when you do that, of the materials can be reused, and you'll look at the facilities often have a reuse center, so good paint comes in and good paint goes out. It's not burned, it's not put into anything else. It's given another opportunity to be used. Our next area and program is the water program. And the water program, again, is a large share of the agency's budget and is funded from many sources. The general fund. And when we talk about the reductions, I will already give you a heads up that we are careful not to do supplanting under this so that we actually track what is our base funding and base activities compared to clean water fund activities so that we do not supplant. And when we look at a reduction in the general fund, we look either at the same percentage or avoiding the water programs just so that we don't supplant the issue. So, again, we have the federal dollars into this program, and the federal government pays both for our regulatory activities and then for monitoring that they want us to accomplish on their behalf. Where I want to focus is where the agency is headed, and it's really a watershed approach. One of the things that we're trying to do is be most efficient as we approach these things. So both from our monitoring, our assessment, and the implementation efforts, we want to do it on a watershed approach rather than a stream segment by stream segment or a lake by a lake. We want to be able to look at the watershed, understand those areas that need protection, and understand those areas that need restoration. And then through the next steps and efforts, we'll be able to target where the cleanups should be or where we can put protection grants on the ground to do. So and just to let you know that we are on schedule to meet the 10-year, both monitoring on a 10-year cycle, and our adjustment for TMDLs will be on that 10-year cycle, and then we hope to implement on the 10-year cycle behind that. So we really are orienting both from assessment all the way to permitting and being able to do basin permitting and act on a watershed basis. And that will allow us to work better both with counties, watershed groups, and our sister agencies that do a lot of work also on the watershed. Again, one of the areas that we hear about and that you're going to see as a initiative in our area is to beef up the what we call the SSTS program, which is the subsurface treatment. Again, the counties really do the work at the local level. We provide the technical assistance to the counties and provide that kind of skill with training. One of the ways that we track our outcomes in this area with the counties is tracking the untreated sewage that is discharged. So you might think of this as the straight pipe to a river or to a lake. or that which is flowing over land. So it's those systems that aren't working. And there are small communities that still exist that have the tank part of it but don't have the treatment part of it. And so they may collect as a system in the community, but it all goes out to the ditch or it all goes out to the stream. So we have the flow that you will see on there that says small communities, which is the blue, really represents 15 communities of 100 unsewered communities that have been identified. And we continue to work with those communities and slowly bring them in. The options they have are really to look at whether they can do individual treatment at the household, maybe do a small community drain field. You might imagine some of these are 20 homes working together. Or can they connect and pipe to a larger city that has the thing? And we work with them and PFA to get them funding in order to do that. The next slide, Mr. Chair, it just is an outcome to show what we've been doing with our MPDS permits in the phosphorus trends. That's one of the kind of regular constituents that you'll hear about that impact surface waters and streams and the loads that you can see. And what we've tried to do on this slide is show to you kind of the key points along the way that have helped us reduce phosphorus being discharged. The top line is what would happen if nothing occurred, so business as usual. We expect that that phosphorus loading into our streams and lakes would continue to increase. What we're really on is a track to decrease this, and you can see one of the main factors is being able to do a basin permit in the Minnesota River and allowing those communities to trade where it's most effective for one community to treat a little bit more. And so they're really combining as a community network within the basin to overall reduce the phosphorus level. And that's what we hope to do in other watersheds by working in a watershed level to do. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move on to the area we call fondly ECOM, which is, again, the Environmental Assistance and Cross Media area. You'll notice that we have a large share of the federal dollars. Again, that's that federal grant that comes in for us to do specific work for them. The Environmental Fund is a good share of this, and a lot of that goes out through pass-through grants to the counties. One of the things that we try to do under this program is to have a community and business assistance, and we have a couple key areas that we work with. One is our small business assistance program, and this is the type of work where a business can call into. It's not connected to our regulatory side of the agency. The small business can call in and ask for assistance on how to meet whatever sort of rule it is, or what is this air rule that says I might need a permit. And through the staff that are there, they really guide the business step by step on what they can do either to avoid the permit.
Time's up.
Is that the phone on speakerphone?
Somebody's calling.
Where's the telephone? Oh, somebody here.
I saw that.
Who is that?
Hello?
Hi, is Julie there?
Sorry, I was actually calling.
This is Ben Patinkin from Grove Insight. I was calling to make sure that multiple people could call into this line.
Would you call the minority leader's office directly instead of this number?
Yeah, certainly.
Thank you.
Good answer. That's nicer than I was going to be, actually.
We were going to have calls.
Woke everybody up, that's for sure.
It just got moved, so.
Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry.
I will continue. I thought maybe I was going to be broadcast across the state there for a while. So anyway, back to our small business. What happens when we're able to work with it, the businesses have really reported to us a saving of over $4 million in 2008 and $1.3 in 2009. And that's both our small business effort and a good partner of us what we call the Minnesota Technical Assistance Program at the University of Minnesota. And we set that program up at the university so that businesses had a place to go and call and not feel like we would take that information and do an enforcement action or a regulatory approach to them. This is really about helping the business improve their process, look at different kinds of components and materials in there so they don't generate a waste, save energy, save water. And we really have a fairly healthy reporting system from MnTap, as we call them, on what they've been able to achieve, but we don't have the details on how they do it. So no business is at risk for having their confidentiality on how they operate their business released to the public or to a competitor. And it's been a very successful program. And the other part that it does is allows access to those engineers at the university that are at the cutting edge of research and bring interns into it where we have the next level of engineers and process and business people. So it's a really good program. And managing. And the last is we don't forget about our retired engineers and what service they can provide, and they're very interested in working with us and with others. They do everything from working with schools on energy conservation things and save schools money. They work with solid waste in the area, but right now we have them focused on energy and energy savings to do. It's a very small program and a small stipend that the retired engineers do. It takes about a half an FTE on our part to manage. And we really have an interest in it in that we have people looking at how they could do a fee for service almost to ensure that we could broaden the number of engineers that could come out and help with them. So we've partnered with the University of Minnesota and their engineering team and their energy teams and the Office of Energy Security to do theirs. And again, in this area, I've moved on to the diesel retrofits just to give a couple highlights here of where we've partnered with the Minnesota Environmental Initiative and the industry to look at how we could help reduce particulate matter in public health. We've leveraged four different grants, both from the state level and the federal, to help both school, public vehicles, and private fleets. The private fleets have reported to us that they've been able to save nearly $1 million and nearly 300,000 gallons of fuel that they have used. Because what happens with this is, particularly with the fleets, we give them alternative power supplies and they don't have to keep their trucks running to keep them warm and keep that diesel going, and so it saves them on the fuel source. It's also made them more competitive in states like California that have very restrictive emission controls on them. Quickly, our last area is, of course, you don't have an organization without some administrative dollars. This is $41 million, which is about 10 or 11% of our overall budget. This, the sort of people that work in this area are HR, our communications, the staff that work for me in fiscal and contracting, and our information technology staff to do. And what I wanted to show you is kind of what we've started to do to save money both in fleet and lease agreements. So on the one slide, just to show you the miles and the trend of our miles and our usage for the vehicles. And as vehicles and our mileage goes down, we're able to actually cut the number of vehicles we have. So, for instance, just this past month, we have ended the leases on 7 vehicles, which results in about $42,000 a year. So we are really looking at where we put the vehicles, how do we manage them, how do we use technology to do meetings rather than going out. We also launched, on the next slide, just to quickly let you know that we launched a carpooling database so that we can take advantage when multiple people from the same office are going to the same place that we'd actually carpool. And because we have different people in different programs, they often don't know that they're going together. It's amazing what a database will bring us together. And so we've really increased our efficiency that way. What's also happened is we've started to carpool with other agencies. We'd really like to look at how this reservation system could be a statewide kind of system so all of our agencies could look and do this together. Right now we have to call each other. If we had one enterprise system, we'd be able to do that together.
Ms. Hallbeck, just a question with regards to vehicles, and then I think we're going to end it right here, members, with the budget reduction starting on Tuesday. The point of leasing cars versus purchasing, have you been doing that for some years? I know the state bid system has worked pretty well over the years. I'm just wondering why we're leasing now versus buying. Obviously, there's a money savings there. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, for us, there is a savings in it, so we mostly use purchased vehicles or owned vehicles by us for the specialty programs, so emergency response and monitoring, where they need to outfit the vehicle in a unique way so that they have the equipment and to be able to respond. And the leased vehicles allows us to have a better response and move the vehicles in and out. We're not quite big enough as a fleet alone to really reap the kinds of savings that a DNR does when they really do a lot more purchasing. One of the things that DNR, and we are because we are co-located in many areas, is looking at how we can look to manage our fleet together and then again reduce and make the optimum measures of it. So we're trying to, on all cases of it, to save.
Certainly appreciate that. Members, any questions to this point? Well, in fashion, we're going to try and end the meeting at 4:30, so we will resume your presentation on Tuesday, and thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Also on Tuesday, members, we will be going late. At the end of the presentation, we are going to be taking up some bills, and we need to get some of those, what we would call smaller bills, out of the way, so plan on putting in a couple extra hours on Tuesday. With that, we're stand adjourned.